Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. November 27, 2022. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Family, The Next Gen. A new documentary in Israel discusses a growing trend in Israel, open marriage. The film presents couples that express feeling stagnation in their marriage and wish to vitalize their relationship. Open marriage is only one facet of a much broader phenomenon of accelerated disfiguration and dissolution of the family unit in an attempt to freshen up people's relationships and revitalize their lives. I can understand where the need is coming from. Humans are dynamic beings. As such, they need constant changes and innovations. This has nothing to do with whether or not we are inherently monogamous. The current perception is that people have families, raise children, bring them to independence, and pass away. We expect this to continue for eternity, but this is not our vocation, it is the vocation of animals, and we have within us something that does not belong to the animal kingdom. We not only live, we ask about the purpose of life. Whether we know it or not, our lives are dedicated not to living, but to understanding why we live. In most people, the question about the purpose of life is still dormant, but in many others, and in many more people every day, it has awakened and demands answers. For such people, nothing is a given, they challenge everything and need to understand why they do what they do. It is not a desire to ruin, but the urge to understand, to comprehend everything that happens on the deepest level. This drive is the reason for the shattering of our traditional social institutions. You find it not only in our homes, but in every aspect of our lives. We question education, economic systems, forms of government, religion, and family. Even if we cannot find answers, there is critical value in questioning existing systems. Distrusting and shunning them liberates us from the shackles of tradition and moral restraint, and the sense of freedom allows us to develop something entirely new, which is not anarchy, but healthier and more fulfilling relationships. Such a society will be one where everyone is willingly and voluntarily committed. In such a society, people are committed not only to their families, but to the entire community, and eventually to all of humanity. Moreover, they are committed to the same extent, and even more than they are currently committed to their families. However, they must choose this commitment freely, and they cannot be forced into remaining committed should they choose to leave. Perhaps it is hard to imagine such commitment at the moment, but humanity is headed toward it nonetheless. In such a society, where everyone is committed to everyone else, everyone cares for everyone else, and the natural feelings of alienation and suspicion no longer set the tone in society. Family ties in such a society will be very strong and solid, but not because people are forced to remain monogamous. The whole purpose of the relationship will change, making issues of monogamy and fidelity irrelevant. Medium published my new article, The Climate is a Matter of Attitude. The 2 weeks of climate discussions at the COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, ended in disappointment. As CNN wrote, the world has failed to reach an agreement to phase out fossil fuels. An attempt to address the biggest source of the planet's warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco after a number of nations, including China and Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. While the members reached an agreement to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters, it will not reverse climate change or solve our major problems. If we want to change the climate, we must change it on all levels, and first and foremost the social climate we have created. As long as it is negative, aggressive, and heating up, the global climate will reflect it. We may be able to assist with local climate crises, but we cannot change the global climate with our current attitude. If we want to change the climate, we must change it on all levels, and first and foremost the social climate we have created. as long as it is negative, aggressive, and heating up, the global climate will reflect it. The reason we hold global climate conferences is that the climate is a global issue. Everything we do, in any country, affects the global climate. Therefore, without global mutual consideration, humanity will not be able to resolve the climate crisis. Regrettably, to work in global mutual consideration, we must develop empathy toward all of humanity and rise above the narrow interests of each country. We are nowhere near such an attitude. On the contrary, each country tries to impose decisions that serve its own interests on the rest of the world, and the result is a climate world war where everyone loses. As is the case with every war, the rich and powerful countries set the tone. They continue to burn fuels that pollute the air and accelerate climate change, and nothing will stop them unless natural disasters become so extreme that they will force all of humanity to change. As is the case with every war, the rich and powerful countries set the tone. They continue to burn fuels that pollute the air and accelerate climate change, and nothing will stop them unless natural disasters become so extreme that they will force all of humanity to change. In the meantime, as lip service, or perhaps to buy the world's consent, they set up loss and damage funds to repair the damage. Such funds do not solve anything, and everyone realizes this. Besides extreme weather and climate disasters, the climate crisis has another adverse impact: icebergs that have been frozen for thousands of years, and often far longer, are thawing. And buried in the ice are countless viruses that have been reawakened, and for which our bodies have no immunity. Scientists are already warning that the next pandemic may actually come not from wild animals or human errors, but from melting icebergs. A paper published 2 years ago aptly named it the permafrost pandemic, and warned of the risk that deadly diseases from the distant past may return. Indeed, if you look at all the crises plaguing the world today, you will find that none of them are local. COVID is a global issue. Climate change is affecting the entire planet, rising energy prices and interrupted supply chains are affecting all of humanity, and even a local crisis such as the war in Ukraine has serious consequences for the entire world. The interdependence already affecting all of humanity will only intensify until we are unable to make a single movement, to take a breath, without affecting the entire world. On the positive side, none of our problems are insurmountable. In every single crisis, if we only work together rather than against each other, it will disappear as though it never existed. All that is needed in order to fix our every plight is to change our attitude and put humanity first. Since reality is global, so should be our order of priorities. Prioritizing humanity will not only help the entire world, but every single individual, precisely because we are irrevocably interdependent. If we continue to impose a narrow vision on an expansive reality, we will continue to collide with one another and with all of nature. If we change our attitude, we will change the climate, and we will change the world. Michael Lateman, on Quora, what was the result of NASA hitting the asteroid? Indeed, NASA managed to hit a giant asteroid and divert it from its orbit, and NASA's director stated that NASA is trying to be ready for anything that the universe might throw our way. I think it is a positive development, but I also think that the universe is not throwing any asteroids at us, to begin with. If we seek a true sense of security on our planet, then we need to acknowledge the existence of a higher force in the universe that is hidden from us. It is a force that encompasses and manages everything and everyone, and through this force, we can manage the universe. We connect to this force in our desire, when we want to come closer to it, to make our desire as its desire. What is its desire? Its desire is for us to operate it toward everybody's benefit, and that everything will connect as a single system. In other words, the general force of the universe is waiting for us, human beings, to activate it in a way that is good and benevolent toward everyone. When we realize the higher forces desire toward us, in such a way, then we also alleviate the blows that we receive from the universe, and will instead feel a major embrace, as if it is hugging us, a sensation of eternity and perfection. Therefore, if we adjust our inner force, a small desire within us, to adapt to nature, we can then manage the universe and feel secure without the need to create devices that crash into asteroids. In the wisdom of Kabbalah, there is a saying, make your desire as his desire, and then he, the higher force, will make his desire like yours. The higher force, or general force of nature, is also called the Creator in Kabbalah. If we wish to come closer to the Creator with a positive intention, then he will do the same toward us. In practice, coming closer to the higher force of nature means exerting a positive influence over all people. If we do so, then we will start feeling that we can organize the forces around us, in nature, on our planet and in outer space harmoniously. Based on the video NASA hits an asteroid, a Kabbalist's response with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman and Aaron Levi. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Free Iran. The World Cup games have barely started, but already, we have seen one of the most memorable pictures, Iran's soccer team staying rebelliously silent while their national anthem is playing before the beginning of their match against England. There have been other protests in Iran against the regime of the Ayatollahs, but this one feels different. They are no longer only against the government's treatment of women, but have become a demand to transform the regime altogether and open it up to the rest of the world. Despite killing more than 400 peaceful protesters, the demonstrations are continuing in full force. The Iranian government is hostile not only toward Israel and toward its own people, it is hostile toward the entire world. Its stated goal is to impose Shiite Islamic law on the entire world, and it will not rest until it achieves it, however long it takes. Unfortunately for them, the Iranian people do not share the goals or dogmas of the regime. They want to live as people live in the free world, where people can do what they want, live how they want, and say what they want within acceptable limits. In short, the Iranian people want to be free and feel free. I have said before that Iran is a very ancient and very intelligent nation. I believe that if the will of the people triumphs, Iran and Israel will not be enemies and will resume the warm relationship that the two countries had cultivated before the Ayatollahs overthrew the Shah and set off a dark chapter in the country's history. Oppression's time is development. Only free people can grow and change and develop, and change is intrinsic to human nature. If not this time, then perhaps next time, but in the end, the Iranian people will free themselves from the regime that wishes to oppress them and bind all of humanity to its yoke. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, no one wants war, but we are always fighting. A few days ago, Norma Levin, the host of the show El Mundo, The World, dedicated one of the shows to answering questions from my students. One of the questions was about the war in Europe. More precisely, the question was why, if no one wants war, do we always fight against each other? Indeed, people cannot live without war. At any given moment, there is an active conflict somewhere on the planet. If you think about it, it makes no sense. If you ask people if they believe that violence can settle differences, they will agree that it cannot. If this is the case, then I, too, would like to ask, why are we fighting? Is it to show who is right? But if this is the reason, it means that the stronger one is also the right one because he won the war. This is clearly the wrong answer. In fact, it is not only wrong, it is deplorable and immoral. How can anyone believe that if you are aggressive and crushed your dissenter, then you are right? This is not justice. It is bullying. We are not even animals, we are worse than animals. Yet, this is human nature. This is how we have been behaving since the dawn of time, and it will not change until we change human nature. When we decide that we are fed up with our egotism and want to try a different way to live on this planet, we will be able to think of more agreeable ways to live. When we decide to give up our self-centeredness, we will discover that opposites do not cancel each other, but complement each other. Opposites do not threaten each other's existence, they secure and support it. Complementary opposites exist not only in nature, but also in humans. Just as spring has no meaning without autumn, capitalism has no meaning without socialism. The same applies to liberalism and parochialism, and globalism and isolationism. Each concept is meaningless without its counterpart, which helps define and clarify it. Yet, the truth lies on neither side. The truth lies in unity and cooperation. Truth is what enables life. The heart and the lungs, for example, perform very different, almost contradictory functions. The lungs saturate the blood with oxygen and the heart streams the blood throughout the body and distributes the blood to the organs. In terms of oxygen saturation, these are contradictory functions. Nevertheless, only when both the heart and lungs function properly can we have a healthy body. The truth, if you will, is neither that the blood must be full of oxygen, nor that it must be devoid of it. The truth is that when the heart and lungs operate properly, there is balance, health, and vitality. Truth, therefore, is balance, not subjugation. If we maintain a balance where all parts of society contribute their respective and unique shares to society, we will have a balanced and healthy society whose members are safe and satisfied. If we try to eliminate any of society's organs, we will condemn all of society to instability, dissatisfaction, and ultimate disintegration. When the soul is crying, my soul shall weep in secret, meaning when one comes to a state of concealment, then my soul shall weep, because one has no other option. Baal HaSulam, Shemati 18, my soul shall weep in secret. Question: what does it mean that the soul is crying? Answer: when a person would like to give everything to the Creator and cling to Him but sees that he is not yet able to achieve this, he feels that his soul is crying. In the spiritual world, as in our world, there are many different states. The soul is crying, the Creator is crying, the children of Israel are crying. But all this happens within one person. In principle, in spirituality, as in our world, there are different tiers, tiers of happiness, grief, and so on. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, November 6, 2022. Life doesn't end with death. The living conditions of the last generation require every member of society to know how this society operates, for what purpose it exists, and in what form it should exist. He must understand that there is no other way than the way nature advances us, and affects us, from all sides, and our duty is to consciously move toward the right goal of our development, without making mistakes. The very first thing a person should learn and explain to others is that peace in society, peace on the planet, and peace in each country depend on each other. We see the shattering that the world is in today, what conflicts countries are involved in, and how it affects every person. There are still people who are dissatisfied with the country and are trying to change the government in it. We need to understand that there is only one way to fix the world, otherwise, we will face the same problems and wars all the time. Therefore, it is so necessary to spread the wisdom of Kabbalah, which explains the structure of the world and the purpose of its existence and discusses the possibility of achieving this goal in the only way, increasing mutual connection between all people. Only in this way will we be able to come to a good life and not just live comfortably until the end of our days, and after us, through the flood, but to achieve eternal life. No one dies, because there is no death, there is only a change in the form of our existence. Time after time, Our form is renewed in many cycles of life. People have always dreamed of eternal life. It is only out of desperation that a person tries not to think about how short life is and how much suffering there is in it. We have to start getting closer to each other, otherwise, the world has no future. In this sense, a person is more unhappy than an animal because the animal does not know that it will die and does not make any plans for the future. A person knows that death is ahead and still continues to live and move toward it, a completely disgusting state. What a relief it would be to know that life does not end and that there is life after death. Our universe is infinite and eternal. It is time to say goodbye to the communist idea that a person has nothing in life but an animal body. The animal body, of course, will die, but everything else in us, human spirit, will remain. We have the opportunity to correct our soul, our inner part, the non-disappearing human self, and belong to eternity. From the third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, November 7, 2022. Writings of Baha Sulam. Peace in the world. When does the Creator shed tears? Question. It is said in the Book of Zohar that the Creator sheds tears into the great ocean. Is it because he cannot make corrections for men? How can we understand that the Creator sheds tears? Answer, tears are O Hazur, reflected light, that is, those properties that a person must express in order to clothe the direct light of the Creator in his reflection. Then the light of the Creator is clothed in the light of man, and a good, normal, direct contact arises between them. Tears are like those remnants, Odafim, that a person cannot correctly perceive and clothe the direct light in them. Therefore, they are thus distinguished and expressed. Comment, as far as I understand, a person should wish to correct himself, but he does not want it. And the Creator, as if, suffers because of this. My response, if we speak from the side of the Creator, then yes. The upper part Suf sheds tears. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, November 6, 2022. Faith above reason is attainment. Question. On one hand, you talk about faith above reason. On the other hand, there is no faith at all in Kabbalah but only attainment. What does it mean? Answer. Faith above reason is attainment. Faith is the quality of bestowal, the quality of being. Bestowal above egoism is called faith above reason. With the help of this condition, a person discovers the upper world by himself. There is nothing you can do about the fact that the concept of faith has been distorted in our world. Everything in our world is distorted. Only a person who has risen to the quality of bestowal can we say is a believer. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, September 24, 2017. The last fairy tale of humanity. Question. What is democracy in your view? Answer. Democracy is the latest fairy tale of humanity, when it is slowly discovering that with our nature, human nature, we will remain in a state of absolute barbarism if we coddle and pamper our nature as we are doing now and ask it what to do. Currently, all kinds of adornments of this barbarism are going through the process of the realization of their pettiness. They are gradually falling off humanity, and what remains is the evil, grumbling, salivating muzzle of the modern generation that no longer has any thirst for anything. The last generation has hit the wall, so to speak. It does not want to leave home from mom and dad, does not want to make decisions on its own, does not want to do anything. Everyone wants to be freelance artists. They are not interested in great accomplishments. Even in the area of egoism, they do not want to invest in anything. They calmly allow their moms and dads to work and do not make any decisions without consulting with dozens of friends on Twitter or Facebook. This generation is completely opposite to the previous one. In the 1960s, during my college years, the generation was boiling, ambitious, marching out. What ambitions and aspirations are there now? There are none. Leave us alone. Figure out everything for us. We do not need anything from you and wish you would not want anything from us. Just provide for us, in some basic way, and that is all. That is the generation we have now. From Cab TV's I Got a Call. What is Democracy? October 12, 2013. Destructive shame and constructive shame. Comment: shame and guilt are feelings directly related to social norms. As norms are changing, shame and guilt are changing. What used to be shameful is not considered so today. Shame, nevertheless, is the result of incongruity to the ideal. Self-condemnation is a destructive form of shame, is constant self-condemnation. My response: that is correct. Why does a person feel ashamed? As a result of self-condemnation. Question: what does he condemn himself for? Answer: everything. That is why there is a sense of shame. Why am I like this? What is wrong with me? And so on and so forth. Question: is this feeling good or bad, and should it be exterminated? Answer: it should be very well targeted. Then there will be no sense of shame, and there will be serious work on yourself. Question: should there or should there not be a sense of shame? Answer: the feeling of shame for the fact that you did not have time to correct yourself into something more proper, kind, and so on. Question: so, I actually have to see something good in front of me in order to experience shame? I do not see anything too good around me. There must be an ideal opposite me. There are no ideals today. I am talking about an ordinary person. Answer: no, it is not about you seeing the ideal in someone in front of you. The fact is that you would see yourself a little better than yourself at the moment. Question: where does the point of shame begin, from which moment? I have to see something good and feel that I am not like that? Answer: the point of shame begins from the moment you study yourself and realize that you have to be a little better, and comparing this image to be no better than yourself, shame arises from the difference between them. Question: where can I get this image? Answer: we can get it only if we study the science of Kabbalah. It will tell us what it means to be righteous, and, based on this, we will see how much we have not grown to this level, and we will be ashamed. Question: what is a righteous person from the point of view of Kabbalah? Answer: a righteous person is one that justifies the Creator's action on him. In everything. And then, by realizing that I am not like that, I feel ashamed. Question: then there are two shames. Is the shame experienced by an ordinary person in our life real shame? Answer: that is a different matter. It is a shame that I was caught stealing, and so on. Question: would you call it shame, the fact that I was caught? Answer: of course. There are a lot of people who blush like that. And if they were not caught, they would feel proud. Question: but that is not the same shame you talk about all the time? Answer: no. I am only talking about the shame that arises in a person who feels himself a degree less than he should have been. Meaning, a degree less than the righteous. And he must come closer to this state of the righteous all the time. Question: shame in our world, the usual shame when a person blushes that he was caught stealing, does this shame lead to that other shame, or is it a step toward it? Or is it purposely given to us, in this world after all? Answer: it is interconnected but very complicated. We should try to do what is revealed to us. Question: and when a parent says to a child, you should be ashamed of what you did, where does he come from? Answer: he must proceed from the fact that the child will correctly discern between what is desired and what is actually there. And when a child understands this difference, he is ashamed that he is not in the best state where he could be, and then this feeling arises in him which can be called shame. From Cab TV's New with Michael Lateman, August 18, 2022. Michael Leitman, on Quora, who are the Jews today? Around 3,800 years ago, Abraham the patriarch reached a perception of the oneness of nature, a perfect unity of everyone and everything as a single whole. He taught the ways of attaining the perception of nature's oneness to anybody who was willing to learn back in ancient Babylon, and the Babylonians who advanced as a group implementing his methodology became initially known as the people of Israel, and later as the Jews. Every Jew today has a part of that perception, but it is yet to reveal itself, that is, it exists only in potential. Revealing the full extent of the perception that Abraham once attained would bring humanity to a state that Kabbalah calls the end of correction, that is, the end of our development from perceiving in an incomplete, transient and divided manner, to perceiving a world where everyone and everything connects as one. We would then discover reality in its entirety, all worlds, created beings and various forms as one system filled with a single light, that is, with a single force of connection. In such a state, we would perceive the true, whole and perfect reality. Moreover, reaching such a perception is not a matter of whether a person is a Jew. Being Jewish is not about being born to a Jewish mother, as is commonly accepted in today's world. A Jew is someone who yearns for connection. The Hebrew word for Jew, Yehudi, comes from the word for united, Yehudi, Yaradevash, part 2, Drush number 2. Anybody who aspires to positively connect with others is on the way to becoming Jewish. The first stage toward reaching a state of unification is the condition that Hillel stated, don't do to others what you hate, and afterward we aim to reach the condition of love your neighbor as yourself. People who are born as Jews have certain remnants with exalted and powerful potential that come from a completely different perception of reality than the one we experience today. Also, humanity's future development will lead to everybody having to reach the same perception as Abraham, where we perceive everything and everyone as one, and toward that perception, it does not matter whether someone was born a Jew or not. Who is a Jew? A Jew is one who wishes to unite everyone, and who feels the whole of reality in addition to feeling oneself. We are Jews if we feel that everything and everyone belongs to us, equally as to everyone else, and we yearn to attain the perception of our life's source, the discovery of everything and everyone as one. Based on the video Who is a Jew Today? With Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman and Ron Levi. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman.